Hello again, you're listening to The Business. We've had some texts in for our competition around daft job titles. One of them is a transparent wall maintenance engineer, otherwise known as a window cleaner. And from Mairead in Tipperary, conversation architect, job title given to a digital marketing manager. So that sounds like it's a real one. Please keep them coming. And don't forget that our favourite suggestion will win a two-night stay for two plus dinner in the beautiful Rathmullen House Hotel overlooking Lough Swilly in County Donegal. If you want to enter the competition, you've got 15 minutes, folks, to get your entries in. To enter, text 51551. One phone 1850 715 150, email thebusiness@rte.ie or tweet to @thebusinessrte. Well, our next two guests apparently don't believe in having job titles at all, but they need very little by way of introduction anyway. John and Frances Brennan have been on our television screens for 6 years now with the TV show At Your Service and also Frances Brennan's Grand Tour programme. But in their day-to-day lives, Frances is the owner of the Park Hotel in Kenmare, and John has just recently opened Drumquina Manor, which hosts events and luxury camping. You're both very welcome to the programme.
Right.
Frances, if I could start at the beginning. You got into the hotel business very early on. You were young.
Well, I went straight from school, all right. But the aspiration of being in the hotel business was there since I was about 12, which is unusual, I suppose, for young fellas.
Why was that, or how did that happen?
I'm sick of telling this story, but anyway. My father bought a tailie coat to get married in 1951 and kept it in the wardrobe. I used to dress up in it and think, oh, this is very stylish. Wouldn't this be the way to go? And then Mum and Dad had plans to open a guest house in 64, couldn't get the money from the bank. But at that time I thought, well, that's great because I'm going to wear the tailie coat. So from the age of 12, I always wanted to be in the hotel business, and that's where
there was
I went.
Nothing more to it than wearing the coat.
No,
that's
and, you
all
know,
that matters.
I never wore a tailie coat. I never got there in the end, but we got everything else. So no, I went straight from school to the hotel business with juries on a training programme in Sligo. Then I went to Cockalbrew Street in Dublin Cajun College and got a degree from there and ended up down in Park Nasilla in the Great Southern and went on from there to Cork and then came back to Kenmare, and that's where I've been ever since.
And the Park Hotel, you were very young when you started running and when you actually owned it.
Well, there was a gentleman locally who lived, when I worked in Park Nasilla, I was only probably 19. I was in college years and in college summer jobs. And a local man saw me there, and then I came back to work there full time, and he wanted to see me. And I thought, oh, go away, I don't need to be seen at all because I'm too busy. But he wanted me to ask me at that stage, I was only 20. He had bought the old Great Southern, which turned out to be the Park Hotel Kenmare in time. And he wanted me to open it for him. And I thought that was a joke because I thought I was only a kid. And I said, no. Subsequent to that, then I left Park Nasilla. I went to work in Cork and I was deputy manager, where really I did a lot of the work and I kind of learned how to run a hotel. And then he came back to me 2 years later and said, listen, I have a Swiss fella that's driving me mad, will you come now? And you know, I kind of learned the ropes then, and so I went back to Kerry then. So that's how I ended up going there. So like, it's fate really, you know. I met a man that kind of had fate.
And you ended up owning the hotel while still in your 20s.
I was only 26 when I took over the hotel. I ran it for him for 4 years. Okay, he had other businesses, loads of different fingers in different pies. And he got into difficulty elsewhere. So the hotel, it was a member of a group and it got into trouble. So I leased it from the liquidator originally, all right? Because I said to him, listen, an open hotel is worth an awful lot of money than a closed hotel, let me tell you, because people will see it open. So I leased it from him, and then he couldn't sell it or couldn't move it on. And then I leased it for a second year, and suddenly I had a few bob. And then I ended up sort of, my accountant, Patchy, and my great man in Cork, said, you know, you have a few bob, would you talk to the banks? So I went talking. I think I spoke to 12 banks, if I recall rightly, at that time. I was only like 24. And all of the banks said no. I was too young and the deal was too big. So the Irish banking system had no faith in youth in that day. But then there was a Swiss guy whom I had met, who had stayed at the hotel on numerous occasions. And I went, chased him in Switzerland, and I borrowed Swiss francs and I bought the park. But that was a dangerous thing to do because I was on a currency situation,
of course,
as well as everything
you
else.
Never thought about.
No, not at all.
When you're doing it. John, your route into the hotel business was quite different, but you were very enterprising from an early age.
Yeah, I was an academic anyway, if that's what you're struggling to say. I left school very early. I left school halfway through the intercert as it was then. And
why did you leave? You just hated it?
No, I didn't hate it. I love school, but I'm not academic. It just didn't work upstairs. So I had great, absolutely fantastic time in Ballester and Sligo. And then I left there and I went on a cert course in Dublin in Roebuck Row, which is the mosque now. There was a cert training college there, a chef's course there. And then I got a job in the Abbot in Monkstown, and I went home for Christmas and I fell on a lake and broke my collarbone. So I lost the job, but I couldn't take the job up. And then I went to work in a hotel in Sligo, which is the exact same hotel that Frances worked on. And her other brother, Damien, worked there as well. So I was there then as a junior barman, and I worked my way through it there for 15 years up to assistant manager and sales manager for it. And we built a leisure centre there. So I got a huge amount of experience then in that. But going through the ranks, I didn't go to college nor that. But I went through the ranks, which was great because you get the ground floor experience on every area and every department. But it's a fantastic industry because you can travel anywhere. I don't think people appreciate that. We'd have people in New Zealand and California, all over the world. And once you're properly trained, and if you set your standard at 5-star, you can always work at 3-star, 2-star, 4-star, 1-star.
So they'll do a stint in different places.
Yeah, and we're seasonal and we close.
Well, so when the two of you then worked together in the hotel in Sligo, did you have any idea?
No, we didn't work together.
Or the same hotel.
Because
there's quite an age difference.
There is, yeah.
Did you ever envisage that you'd end up working together for quite
really.
A few years?
No.
You see, Francis, there was 13 years in the difference, and our father got sick and he moved to Sligo with mum, and I was only 14 at the time, or 13 at the time. So Francis was in college in Dublin at that stage. So we never actually lived together or were in the same house for years together. So when I went to chase another project in Sligo, there's always a project on the burner, but I went to chase another project in Sligo and that fell by the wayside at the 11th hour. And then at that stage, then Francis said, would you come down to Kenmare? And I said, great. And then I went. So we were only married a year, I suppose, or 2 years at that stage.
Would you have said at that time that you really knew each other well?
No, not at all.
We wouldn't have at all.
I took a huge risk.
Well, we're still together, as the fella says. So obviously it worked all right. No, we never have a problem in that area at all. Never.
No. And how does it work out? You must have some differences of opinion.
It's funny now, because you have a topic on this morning about titles, and we don't have titles.
No.
And that's probably part of the reason why we get on so well and why it works. And we have a general manager in the hotel, and we have a head receptionist, and we have a head chef and all of that. But we all do everything. It's not an issue.
I could carry as many bags as... No, I won't say the porter because they'll kill me, but do you know what I mean? Like, we do. I have no problem carrying people's bags in and out of the hotel. But there wouldn't be a 5-star hotel in the world where the owner would carry bags except me. But I don't even notice.
You just don't think about it.
No.
In the TV show, you both have very... It comes across that you have very different roles. You're the front of house guy, Francis, who says, this is what's wrong and this is how I'm going to fix it. Yeah. John is the number crunching expert who's going to decide whether the numbers stack up. Is that how it is?
No, not in real life at all.
That's a television kind of... Because it suits television to have it that way, because you kind of have to define roles. And, you know, I come and go a few times because they're doing a bit of decor or whatever they might be doing. So that's why I end up in that sort of front of house
situation. So are you as serious, John, as you come across in the programme?
By no means. I don't believe I am anyway. You see yourself in television sometimes and say, sweet Jesus, that's not me. But it just comes across differently, and it's the way it's edited, and it's the way the format of the programme is put together all makes sense. But it isn't actually the way it works in real life. Neither of us would really be figures people in that sense. We wouldn't be structured.
We don't crunch like that. We have Patchy and Mike, as I mentioned earlier on in Cork. He's the best cruncher we've ever had. He'll tell us where we're going wrong or all this. And you know, at college I wasn't good at accountancy or whatever they called it. I don't know what they even called it then. But I always thought, not to worry about that because we can buy that. We'll get somebody to do that for us. Do you know what I mean?
You come across, Francis, in the programme as you're very good at giving very practical advice to people in difficulty and running businesses that are a million miles from the Park Hotel. But are you a real perfectionist? You come across as a perfectionist.
Yeah, it would be a bit of a nightmare, right? Yeah, I am like that. I know I am. I mean, but you know what the best thing about it is I know. So that's fine.
And everyone else knows.
And when I give advice, you know, people say to me, how did you say that to them? What did I say? They said, like, you really grilled it into them. I didn't even notice I grilled it into them. I just said it as it was. And I'm always very straight. Do you know what I mean? I always tell people straight up. The Irish were not, you know, we kind of said, well, maybe you have a little problem there. I said, there is a problem there. So, you know, it's better to be direct and say
and
it.
You're a perfectionist in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, right? You couldn't live. I never lived with anybody in my life, nor nobody could ever live with me. My father told me that when I was a child.
Right.
So, and he's dead. Dad's dead a lot. Nearly 30 years
now.
But he was right. You just couldn't live. I mean, I just know where the scissors is, and I just.
They converted the garage to move him out in our house. That's the truth.
They made the garage into a bedroom at home, yeah.
So, how do you work with Francis's perfectionism then, John?
It is great, because it's absolutely superb, because it goes into the blood, and it's not only in me, it's in the 50 or 60 staff that we employ. And once it comes down from the top like that, and it's interesting, because Francis hasn't got an office in the hotel, he works out reception. So everything is hands-on and it's controlled, and that's great. But when we go someplace else, but from a programme point of view, I think we have a good ability to walk into a business and see what's wrong. And I think a lot of people do that, but we're just lucky enough to have the television programme. But when we go in there, we would never recommend anything that we wouldn't do ourselves if we owned that property.
Or waste money.
Yeah.
We do not waste money.
We would treat it as our own, always.
And after all these years, Francis, with the hotel, are you still as... passionate and is interested in the hotel business. Would you ever, I mean, there's a lot of international investors now buying up hotels in Ireland. Would you ever consider selling it?
Everything has a price. And, you know, I learned a lesson from a very good friend of mine many years ago that had a business. And I got him an offer on it, and there was a 200,000 difference on the offer. And he said no. And 17 years later, he still had that business and he hated every minute of it. And he was in his 79th year when he did a pseudo deal with his son to sell it to him, like where he got a few bob every week, God help him, all right? And I said to myself, there is no way I'm going to end up at 79 in a situation like that. So if somebody wants to write a cheque for the park tomorrow and it suits me, fine, I will take the cheque. And the best man that did that was Fergal Quinn. I admire him so much. He took the cheque of a family business because he got the value that day.
Have you had offers? Have people approached him?
Oh,
sure,
they
must have
over the years. Yeah,
but
we have.
You weren't satisfied with what
no,
they
well, I didn't
were.
Want to then. No, but I'm in my 60s now and, you know, things change as life goes on. You know, I haven't got chicken or child. John now has his own business, so there's a little less responsibility for their family, if you know what I mean.
John, you wouldn't be interested in actually buying out Francis, would you?
No, I think that the case that he's referring to has a rope around the poor young fella's neck, so I won't be putting that around my neck, no. Right. It's, no, the it probably comes down to business and where the hotel sector is in Ireland. We have a fantastic product in Kenmare, right in the centre of town. I can't find another hotel like it in the world where you're in the middle of the country in your bedroom, but yet you walk out your front door and you have 44 restaurants on your doorstep. And we have an 18-hole golf course and the spa and the leisure centre, the whole thing there. So it ticks all the boxes.
You've got all the plugs there, John.
If the offer was right, we wouldn't say no.
But you mentioned there about the hotel sector in Ireland.
Yes.
I mean, there was a lot of bad news around it. There appears to be a lot of good news because a lot of hotels are changing hands. Tourism numbers are up. Are you positive about the developments?
I think the Irish hotel sector has seen a bigger as big an investment in the hospitality sector as Dubai or as Las Vegas in recent years. And we are still a small island off the west coast of Europe. And we have a huge influx of new property and new product, which isn't always very attractive. There's an awful lot of unattractive bedrooms in unattractive hotels and unattractive roundabouts on the outskirts of unattractive towns, but yet they're all absorbing business. And we have a very small market. I see a report in today's paper where 70% of bed nights come from the domestic market. That is a huge, huge percentage to rely on a small population with the number of rooms we have per head of capita in Ireland.
But if we're going to draw in large tourist numbers, we need to have a good mass market product. We need
Correct.
To have cheap
yes.
hotels.
Okay,
cheap
do you
and
think
cheerful.
We can have a cheap hotel with the cost of living we have in Ireland and the minimum wage and the energy costs that we have? You cannot do it. We're not a cheap destination. We're foolish if we believe we are. You cannot deliver a cheap budget experience with the cost base that we have here. You can do it for a certain amount of time, but the wear and tear in hotels and the refurbishment and the reinvestment that is required in that sector is phenomenal.
So do you think we're pitching our tourist product in the wrong end of the market?
I think Tourism Ireland have a difficulty in that we have a huge collection of new properties which are mass market mid-range hotels. Which
these are all the tax incentives.
Tax incentives. And also
I was in the car park of one of those hotels yesterday on the M50, all right? And four Dutch people came out the front door of the hotel, okay? And they were going to town. Now, this was in the middle of an industrial estate. And I just thought to myself, isn't that sad? That they have to go out to wherever they had to go. I wouldn't even know where to go myself for a bus. They weren't taking a taxi.
But they
now.
Might have checked online where the hotel was, and the price was so cheap and compelling.
Yeah,
they knew they were going to be in an industrial
nice
estate, and they
to come on your
mind.
Holidays and to be in an industrial estate on the M50, and you come out at the front door and you don't know where to go.
Although
to
some
get the
people
bus.
Love a bargain.
Oh, stop it! It wouldn't be Ireland. That is not Ireland.
Yeah.
And I just thought to myself, that's sad. I actually thought it was sad. I was walking into the hotel for a meeting.
You were nearly going to give them a lift.
Well, I did have a chat with them, and you know what it is? If I would have given them, I'd be that sort. I said, "Get in there, and I'll drop you down to O'Connell Street," because I think that's what Ireland is all about. I was going to a meeting inside, but I just thought it was sad that those four tourists are like, I wouldn't like to be on the outskirts of Amsterdam, like in an industrial estate with a bus stop five blocks away or wherever it might be. I don't know where it even was from where we were. You know, I don't think that's a good... Now, the hotel was good value. It's a fixed price hotel with a big sign. We all know it. And it's good value, but it's not Ireland.
The other side of that now is interesting to why that hotel is there. Because I would guarantee you the reason that hotel is there is because from a planning application with a multi-use facility which had residential, retail, office, had to incorporate a hotel. Yeah. Now, there was no market demand for the hotel in the area at all, like in an awful lot of cases. And that's the difficulty that we have. We
so
go.
It's an afterthought.
It's a policy
it was a
decision.
Policy decision by the county
to incorporate. If the developer went in for a pre-planning meeting with planners, they were told to get this level of density of a residential, which is what they were all chasing, it had to incorporate X amount of square footage for retail, X amount of square footage for office, and a hotel of certain number of rooms. No one did any market research as to what the requirement was for rooms in that area.
Well, aside from those kinds of properties.
Yeah. Yeah. But that is the bulk of the investment of the issue that we're facing
and
in the country.
And it's there and it's got to be built.
It's not going to go anywhere.
In terms of other hotels, there's a huge wave of international money coming into Ireland to buy up a lot of hotels. A lot of them are being bought, it seems to me, at very, very attractive prices, particularly in Dublin.
Yes.
And they seem to be packed to the rafters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, are people going to make a lot of money?
Between the two,
but it won't be Irish people. That's another problem. It's not Irish people who are going to make the money. And they'll flip those hotels in time, okay, and maybe Irish companies might buy them back, but we'll pay twice the price that they paid for them.
The two best purchases in the country was Ashford Castle by Red Carnation and Doonbeg by Trump, for the simple reason both of them are hoteliers, both of them understand the market, both of them will bring business with them to Ireland at a price point which it justifies the investment that they had made in a quality product, and that is great for Ireland. They will bring business with them.
During the boom years, John, you would have come across and actually been in business with some developers over the years, and you've had a few brushes. I remember reading about Sean Dunn and Ball's Bridge Hotels.
Yeah. Sean approached me and asked me, at that stage it was a very different world and there were 600 bedrooms lying empty in the middle of Ball's Bridge. He was having difficulties with his planning permission and he thought maybe we could reopen the hotel for a year. So we went in, when the hotel closed down, they literally took the phone system out with a chainsaw, quite literally through the middle of reception. So we got the place up and running within 3 months and then we had a little falling out and we went to the High Court and all of that is history. But that was 600 rooms in the middle of Ball's Bridge, which we opened and was very, very successful and still trades today. But those that there was, funny enough, though, in that particular planning application, he was dictated to have a hotel on that site.
Right.
He had regards whether he wanted it or not. Exactly. Yeah. But I would have, and then with Ballymore, I did a spa with them in Canary Wharf in London, and I did another project with them in Ireland here as well. So we would have been involved with a few things, but nothing major.
Do you like to see developers coming back? Some of them are.
I'd like to see some Irish fellas coming back. Can I tell you? Like, everybody gives out about the developers and all that carry on, but like, we employed a lot of people. There was a lot of things done. There was office buildings built which are full today with Googles and otherwise, all right, and all of those people. They might not be here if those boys hadn't done what they did.
No, but the bill attached to it wouldn't be either, for
instance. That's right.
It was a vicious circle we were running around about and it would just kept going.
That was the bubble that came with it, I suppose. But the early boy, I mean, those people that did the original work early on, all right, the country wouldn't be as vibrant as it is today if they hadn't been there.
And I think they took risk and they saw opportunity where others didn't. And I think some of them put money into architecture, which stands today in very, very fine buildings, the convention centre and various different buildings, the Ulster Bank building. And then there's other fellows who didn't and were cowboys, and that's what's given that industry a bad name.
Well, if you look at the hotel industry and the sector, one of the things in the TV programme is really about getting people to up their game.
Yeah.
Do you think collectively we have in the industry in Ireland upped our game, and do we need to do it a bit more?
I'm just after coming back, I went to Scotland last week for 5 days, and I'd have to say the quality of what we have here would be far superior.
Yeah.
They are much busier, they get better prices than we get here, but the quality of what we have here would be far superior.
The product here would be far, far superior.
Are we not selling it well enough?
We just don't have enough people, to be quite honest. We need to get more people into the country, and we need to get them out of Dublin and around the country.
Okay. They've 60 million.
Now, there's a flower show, you know, on an RTS. I was just talking about it before we came in. The flower show on the world thing. We have two groups from them now coming this week to Kenmare, like I think Wednesday and Thursday night for 2 nights. That's brilliant for the country. So that's what we need.
But the best thing that ever happened from a tourism point of view in recent years, forget Ryder Cup, forget all the big investments, was the football match in Rotterdam.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. John and Francis Brennan, thank you very much for joining us this morning.